The subject for our second class, brethren and sisters, Joseph, a man of principle. The teacher, our brother Trevor Pritchard. Class number 5, lessons for ourselves. Brother Pritchard.
This class, brethren and sisters.
Hold it.
He's spoilt by his father, sold as a slave by his brothers. He finds himself in service, under temptation, exalted to a position of authority, unjustly thrown into jail, lifted out of jail, and given a position the highest in the land. Now, I don't think any of us here can identify with that set of experiences. To say that life has its ups and downs, in the case of Joseph, would be a very singular understatement. But there are things that we can learn from his attitude, the attitude that Joseph had. At every stage, he was aware that God was with him. That some of the things had happened, particularly because God had sent him there. He fully admitted to his brothers, didn't he, that God had sent him into Egypt to preserve life. So I thought against that background, brethren and sisters, and in a sense, for the first time this week, I'm overlapping with something that Brother Barry said yesterday. I'm going to talk today about the 3 T's. No golf. I'm going to talk about the 3 T's. With respect to those brethren who do play golf, this is infinitely more important than anything else in life. Temptation, trial, and tribulation. I must, first of all, though, having told you what I'm going to say, I must also say something else. I'm a happily married man. You haven't met my wife, but strangely enough, she would actually fully admit to being a happily married woman. We've been married 35 years, but we've known each other for about 51 years, which is a long time. But neither Val, Sister Val, nor I can sympathise with a widow or a widower, simply because we have never had that experience. So it is quite impossible for us. We might say things, but we have no concept of the experience. So we cannot extend meaningful sympathy to someone who has lost their partner. It is impossible. And therefore then, much of what I have to say this morning, brethren and sisters, is against that background of impossibility. That is, that talking to some of you during this week, some of the experiences that you have had in life, Sister Val and I have never experienced in life as yet. So therefore then we cannot extend that sympathy of experience which is essential for full understanding of one another. But I begin with tribulation. Now there is, in the parable of the sower, one of the parables I've been looking at with the young people. If you turn to the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 13, the word tribulation occurs there, verse 21. This is the shallow soil with a strata of rock underneath. The seed is sown, it grows up, the sun comes out, shrivels it away because it has no root. Verse 21. Yet hath he not root in himself, but dureth for a while. But when tribulation or persecution... I'm thinking of tribulation. This is Matthew chapter 13, verse 21. If you've got an Oxford Bible, it's page 20 down at the bottom. Isn't it? When tribulation or persecution ariseth because of the word, by and by he is offended. But there is tribulation quite apart from the word, brethren and sisters. Now, I'm not a linguist, I'm just an ignorant mathematician. I'm interested in words, but I understand from those who know, in this particular case, Brother Fred Pierce, that the word tribulation comes from a Greek word, phlipsis, which means pressure. Now, it's strange that in this 20th century, that is one of the common words which is used, isn't it? The pressures of everyday living. So when you read tribulation or tribulations, you just read pressure or pressures in the common everyday sense of the word, the pressures of everyday living, and you'll have a pretty good idea of what it is about. But there are pressures of everyday living which have nothing to do with the word at all. It has to do with suffering of one sort and another because of circumstances or people. It is part of the human condition. The human condition. Because we, as children of God, are humans, we therefore have these same experiences. But everybody has these experiences, these pressures, simply because they are part of everyday living. For instance, brethren and sisters, and we are most presumptuous in this. Today, I believe, is Friday, although one of the delights of this week is that you forget what day it is. You don't even know what the date is. You think it's still April, and it might be 1991, but all these things are irrelevant when we're together in this fashion. But we're all a little presumptuous. All right. We know the date today, or we think we do, and we say, well, now, tomorrow we're off to do so-and-so, we shall have our lunch, and off we will go, and on Sunday we shall go to the meeting, on Monday we shall go, I've been promised to go to the Epcot Centre. Tuesday, God willing, I shall get in one of these big mechanical birds and fly home. But we presume, James chapter 4, go to, ye that say, tomorrow. We shall go into this city and that city and buy and sell and get gain. We always quite rightly say, God willing. And we should always say, God willing. Because we do not always know what the will of God is for us. For it is God that worketh in you both to will and to do of his good pleasure. That's what the apostle says to the Philippians, I think the second chapter. It is God that worketh in you both to will and to do of his good pleasure. But you see, for the people of the world, they have all these pressures of life as well. They have their tragedies. And some of those tragedies are absolutely horrendous. I had colleagues at school, and they would come and sit next to me and say, Pritch, tell me why. the man came to me, and his wife and only daughter had been killed in a road smash the day before. But that man did not know the Lord. How do you think he felt? At least, brethren and sisters, no, that's totally wrong. I should not have said that. We have the Lord on our side. And we see the tragedies of life that occur to us. They happen to us. But we see them against the background of knowing the Lord and knowing the purpose of God. Try to imagine, brethren and sisters, that you did not know the Lord and that you had never, ever opened a Bible meaningfully. And that sort of tragedy hit you. And yet I've known some people who do not know the Lord and yet they face such tragedies with far greater resilience than we do. I admire such people. I admit frankly, I admire such people. We do not know what may lay in the future. Things will happen, and at the time of them happening, we cannot understand it. And I think the first thing, frankly, to admit is that we do not always understand the purpose of God for us. Except this, and to help us to understand it, I'd like us to turn to the book of Deuteronomy. And chapter 8. At the heading of the chapter in my Bible, it says, an exhortation to obedience in regard of God's dealings with them. Now, I can identify with some of these words, and I'm sure you can too. Verse 7. For the Lord thy God bringeth thee into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and depths that spring out of valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley and vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of oil, olive and honey, a land wherein thou shalt eat bread without scarceness. We say amen to that because we can identify with that. Thou shalt not lack anything in it, a land whose stones are iron and out of whose hills thou mayest dig brass. When thou hast eaten and art full, then thou shalt bless the Lord thy God for the good land which he hath given thee. Beware, 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 that thou forget not the Lord thy God in not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes which I command thee this day. Oh yes, lest when thou hast eaten and art full and hast built goodly houses and dwelt in them, and when thy herds and thy flocks multiply and thy silver and thy gold is multiplied and all that thou hast is multiplied, then thine heart be lifted up and thou forget the Lord thy God. Now this question of the heart being lifted up, it's not lifted up in service to God. It's lifted up in a sense of pride and vanity. You know the psalm, I think it's 15. He who hath not lifted up his soul unto vanity, nor sworn deceitfully. You know, who shall dwell in the hill of the Lord? Who shall dwell in the hill of the Lord? And who shall dwell in his holy place? It is Psalm 15. So we can, brethren and sisters, become a little presumptuous. Because we are God's children, we can presume on the mercy of God. And I can't remember, I've said this week, but whether I've said it publicly, and if I have, forgive me because I'm about to say it again, but I think only privately have I said this. When I was a little boy in Coventry in the UK, when the city was badly bombed by the Nazis, and that was an horrendous day. And I went to school and the register was called, and Joe Smith, yes miss, Harry Brown, yes miss, Patrick Jones, silence. They'd all been killed the night before. I was only sort of 7 or 8 at the time. But that sort of thing hits you. Now, there were some brethren in the UK then who said, now we are looked after by the Lord, therefore our houses will never be bombed. Now that is presumptuous, brethren and sisters. But some brethren and sisters had a very hard time when their houses were bombed and they lost everything. You see, they were in a good land. England's not a bad place, really. They were in a good land. They were well fed. I know it was coming out of the Depression, but most people were well fed and well looked after. And it is easy for us as brethren and sisters to become presumptuous. Now, I don't wish to be unkind when I say that, but it can happen. And we can presume that the pressures of life will in some way not apply to us. But look at the purpose of it. Deuteronomy. Yes, then thine heart be lifted up, and thou forget the Lord thy God, which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. There's the parallel. I know we've jumped from Joseph to Moses, but Moses led them out of the land. We have been led out of darkness into light. That's what it says on Franklin Pierce's, the college at Franklin Pierce, doesn't it? Out of darkness into light. That's their coat of arms, part of their coat of arms. And we have been led out of darkness into light. Who led thee through the great and terrible wilderness, wherein were fiery serpents and scorpions and drought, and we can, as we read those names, we can identify them. And we say that we are on a wilderness journey, brethren and sisters, don't we? So therefore, there are counterparts to those experiences. Who brought forth water out of the rock of flint, who fed thee in the wilderness with manna. We think of the bread of life, and we think of Joseph again, which thy fathers knew not, that he might humble thee, and that he might prove thee, to do thee good at thy latter end. Now, to me, brethren and sisters, it is in those words that lies the secret to understanding tribulation, the pressures of life. It is so that God might do us good at our latter end. In this life, there are pressures for all of us, but they are there to mould us. They are there to guide us. They are there to help us understand that God is working in our lives. Again, I don't know whether I've told you this publicly or, but certainly some of you privately. The other week I was at Watford Easter weekend, and we were thinking on the death, on the suffering, the death and the resurrection of the Lord. And on the Saturday afternoon, which was a free period for a couple of hours, one sister said, "Could you take me to see my niece?" So I said, "Of course." So she got in the chariot. That's what cars are for, to take people around. Other people, of course. It's one of the chariots of the Lord, but that's another story. And we went to see her niece in hospital. A young sister of the age of, well, I never know how old sisters are, but she looked to me to be 29 or 30. But I could be maligning her, I could be complimenting her unbelievably. But and to listen to her speak, she knew about the pressures of life, because you may have heard of the IRA spate of bombs in railway stations in Britain. Well, her left leg stops now just below the knee, and her right leg has about 6 or 8 months' work to be done on it to put it right. But you know, we went to see her. She was the exhortation to us, the visitors, because of her positive attitude. She said, and she was not being unctuous when she said this. She said, "There are clearly lessons for me to learn. I could have been blown to pieces, but I'm still here because there are more lessons for me to learn." And her attitude was entirely positive. Never once did she have on her lips the words, "Why has this happened to me?" Now, please forgive me, brethren and sisters, when I say that those words are totally understandable, aren't they? You know, we should turn in on ourselves and say, "Now, why, what have I done to deserve this? Why should this happen to me?" But it happened to her, and her attitude was totally positive. She said, these are part of the pressures of life. There was a gentleman a few in another ward, a few beds down. Now, he'd lost his leg, but she said, he doesn't know the Lord. How's he going to cope? You see the difference, brethren and sisters. It is to do us good in our latter end. It's no use us reading Hebrews chapter 11. And you know, Brother Barry pointed out the two categories, didn't he? In the last few verses. And we think of some of the terrible things that happened to those people. It was for their faith. When persecution ariseth because of the word. Yes, in that context. But whatever happens to us in life, brethren and sisters, whatever happens to us, if as a result of that, when we're able to look back on it in the mercy and by the grace of God, the Lord looks on us and says, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. If he says that to us, then whatever pressures we've experienced in life, they will be as nothing compared with the gift of immortality. Now, if I've said that badly, forgive me. If I've sounded trite, forgive me too. But if we have a positive attitude, like this young sister, I think it helps us to cope with those pressures of everyday living. There's another sense, not associated with tragedy, and I began to talk about it when I said we say God willing, or sometimes we forget to say God willing. And we make our plans and we say, well, I'll do so-and-so, and then when I've done that, you know, like a young lad or young girl at school, well, I'll get my school grades and then I'll go on to college and university and then I'll do whatever I'm going to do and be very successful and so on and so forth. We make all our plans, we forget to ask God first. I've been very guilty, brethren and sisters, many times, and since I have a suspicion that we're not entirely dissimilar from one another, despite external appearances to the contrary. There are times when all of us make our plans and then ask God to bless what we've designed to do. That's really the wrong way round. Because it may be that God doesn't want us to do what we're designed to do anyway. And looking forward, if we have laid these plans without reference to our Father to the extent that we ought to have done, it's easy for us to say that things have, quote, gone wrong in our lives, merely because the plans that we had for ourselves have not quite worked out the way we wanted to work them out. You see what I mean? But God has different paths for us to walk along. But he designs those paths that he might do us good at our latter end. I rang a brother once at home just to ask him a very simple question, to which the answer was a piece of information which I knew he had and I hadn't. And I rang him up and said, Brother Philip, it's Brother Trevor Pritchard here from Leamington. Oh, he said, I'm glad you've rung up. I put the phone down about an hour later. I won't distress you with the details, but he'd had a particularly nasty experience, and I became a listening post. You know, very important function, brethren and sisters, being a listening post, just so that someone can talk to you. He said, what do I do? So I said, well, let's read Psalm 37. And it was particularly pertinent to his situation because he got really boiled up, as we say in the UK, got really annoyed with something that had gone sadly wrong because of somebody else who'd really done entirely the wrong thing. Chapter 37 of the Psalms. Fret not thyself because of evildoers. neither be thou envious against the workers of iniquity. For they shall soon be cut down like the grass and wither as the green herb. Trust in the Lord and do good. And then there is the material blessing for the children of Israel. Delight thyself also in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thine heart. Now, that verse is the hard verse, because there are some desires of our heart, brethren and sisters, which we feel are exactly right for us, but God is saying no, because they will not be the means of him doing thee good at thy latter end. And we've got to accept that. That's the hard part. Commit thy way unto the Lord. In the margin it says, roll thy way upon the Lord. It is as if we have thrown ourselves, I mean sometimes we express the words, we throw ourselves entirely on God's mercy. But I wonder if we really do, or whether we keep back part of the price. We don't trust God as implicitly as we should. You know, daughter jumping from the top stair all to the bottom and saying, Dad, catch. Do we do that with our Father in heaven? Commit thy way unto the Lord, trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. And he shall bring forth thy righteousness as the light. See, thy righteousness, the Lord speaks of righteousness because our trust in him has been total. Our faith in him has been total. Think of Abraham. He was told to sacrifice his son. That was no accident that happened. That was no tragedy that happened. That was a design piece of God's handiwork to bring pressure to bear on Abraham and to test his faith. And for Abraham, he had as good as sacrificed his son. And yet, as we all know from our Sunday school days, he'd said to the servants who went with him, and we will return. The two of us will come back. He could see through the impossible to the reality. And we too have to learn from the scriptures to see through the impossible to the reality. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him, we read in verse 7. Fret not thyself because of him who prospereth in his way, because of the wicked man who bringeth wicked devices to pass. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Fret not thyself in any wise to do evil. And there are times, brethren and sisters, when the evil which man does to others gets us really boiled up, and we do get in a fret about it. I will frankly admit, brethren and sisters, that when I are a bomber who is about to put a bomb into some poor woman's vehicle and say, drive to that military post, and the bomb blows up in his hands in a strange sort of way, and forgive me for the thought, let alone the words, that I feel, well, he's got his just deserts. I think we can all identify with that in a strange sort of way. It's not a Christian thought, but we can identify with it. We have to be prepared to commit our way entirely to God, so that the pressures of life will help mould us, so that God shall do us good at our latter end. And having said all that, we remember the words of Romans chapter 8. For it is God that worketh in you. No, I'm quoting Philippians 2 again, aren't I? Romans chapter 8 and verse 28. Those words, I think, if only we can really trust them, will help us to understand the pressures of ordinary everyday life. All things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. When it says all things, it doesn't just mean the nice things like Bible schools. It means the nasty, the unpleasant, the tragic, the horrendous, the frightening. They're all there to mould us so that God shall do us good in our latter end. Now, that is all to do with tribulation. But as you have seen, brethren and sisters, as we've gone along thinking about this, that clearly includes the concept of trial. There is an overlap. You've got sort of tribulation, and you've got trials. And some tribulations are a great trial to our faith, because so horrendous are they that our faith is tested to breaking point. But like the sister in hospital in London, we have to try and have a positive attitude. But then there are also tribulations which occur because of our faith. Our faith is directly tested. We are challenged about our belief. Now, 100 years ago, that happened constantly. And brethren were always there with the sword of the Spirit in their hand, hacking away at error. Today, we have to fight indifference. It's like trying to arrange a meeting in a village where everybody's half asleep and they want to do something about the village apathy, so they arrange a meeting, but nobody comes. And that's what we have to fight, brethren and sisters. It's like trying to fight clouds of cotton wool. There's no resistance. And although we are positive about our faith, we find that the challenges to our belief these days hardly exist. People are quite willing to say, well, that's your belief and this is my belief and we'll agree to differ. They won't face the challenge. And sometimes we can sort of go over the top and be over-challenging in our challenge and cause offence in the worst sense of that word, and therefore say, and turn people away from Christ, merely by our attitude of mind. Not what we're doing, but the way we do it. And the way we do something is very often more important than what we're doing. So trials to our faith because of that are nowhere near as strong. I had the privilege of reading a history of the truth in Germany during the Nazi period, and read a letter from the German council for a brother who would not take up arms and become part of the Wehrmacht, the German army, and the man was shot. That was unusual. I think he was the only brother who was shot for this reason. But we don't have any challenges of that sort at all. And therefore, our danger is that we shall be swallowed up by the apathy that surrounds us. That's our danger, brethren and sisters. And we shall find ourselves, if we analyse our lives, and we were to take out our Bible readings and Bible schools and going to the meeting and so on, our lives would not really be all that much different from the man next door. And he has no faith. Well, unless you have a brother or sister living next door to you, in which case I apologise. We could become just like the people next door. Respectable, law-abiding citizens who have some unusual ideas. But somehow or other, the impact, the dynamism of that message has gone cold. Not lukewarm, but cold. So there is the exhortation. Because trials to our faith as such are nowhere near as direct and immediate as they were in times past, when we think of, say, Brother Alan Eyre's book, Brethren in Christ. Because of that, we can go cold on our faith, not just lukewarm. So the danger is to be swallowed up in apathy. And that in itself is a trial, brethren and sisters, of our faith. It's a funny sort of trial, but we must recognise it. We can be swallowed up by the quality of life around us. Tribulation, testing our faith, temptation. And there's a bit of an overlap here between temptation and what I've just been saying. Joseph had a very direct temptation. Somebody wanted, Potiphar's wife wanted him to lay with her. That was a very real temptation. Joseph resisted it very positively, and successfully until, of course, she turned the tables on him. And then he was put in jail for something he'd never done. Temptations. A brother once said, I can resist anything you like except temptation. And we find ourselves in that position sometimes, brethren and sisters. Temptations, they're all different for each one of us. Some temptations that might have a stranglehold on you, don't touch me. And others which hammer me to death, you, if I told you about them, if I confessed my faults to you, as I should, you would be surprised. I think you probably would. Let's just have a look. Ephesians chapter 2. Verse 3. Or verse 2. Children of disobedience, among whom also we all had our conversation in time past, in the lusts of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind. I don't know why it is, brothers and sisters, but we usually associate temptation with the grosser lusts of the flesh. And we think, ah, yes, that means Joseph and Potiphar's wife trying to run off with him. But it says there, the lust of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind. Now, it is that that marks out the Christian brother and sister. You remember, thinking of Joseph, how the Lord Jesus said, ye have heard that it hath been said by them of old time, do not commit adultery. But I say unto you, whosoever lusteth after a woman in his heart, lusteth after a woman, hath committed adultery already with her in his heart. So the whole thing is lifted onto a much higher plane, brethren and sisters. It is not the actuality of the deed, it is the desire of the mind. And therein lies the danger, because as Brother Barry reminded us a minute or two ago, and as I was telling you Brother Dennis Gillett's story the other day about the locked room in our house, the place where we don't want God to go. We try to presume that God does not see these lusts in our hearts. Lust of the flesh, yes, and lust of the mind. The desire for promotion in this world. The desire for more money. The desire for more power. The desire for a better, in the worldly sense, lifestyle. And usually if it's better in the worldly sense, it's worse in the spiritual sense. There is a story about a brother at home. I know him well, but I will not mention his name for embarrassment. But his daughter used to go and stay with a sister up in the north of the country, and the sister lived in what I call a straightforward, humble home. You went straight in off the street into a little room. There was a kitchen at the back, two bedrooms upstairs, no bathroom. But this young sister living in the north, with whom this daughter of the brother used to go and stay, would never return the visit. She would never go back and stay with this sister down in the south. She was embarrassed at the affluence of the home from which this young sister came. Her father got to hear of this. He sold his house as soon as he heard of it and bought a much simpler dwelling. And the sister from the north would then come and stay. Now, I've simplified the story over much, but you see what I mean? The attitude of mind of this brother. Yes, very nice to have an affluent home. Beautiful. But he realised that it was a barrier to somebody, so he got rid of it. If thine eye offend thee, pluck it out. So he sold his home and bought a much simpler home. And that welded together the fellowship of these two sisters. Think about that, brethren and sisters. I often do, to my shame. So lust of the flesh and lust of the mind as well. Power, influence, more money, better lifestyle. These are all temptations. And that's why I say there's a bit of an overlap with what I was saying before. That is, if you take out of your life Bible schools, going to meeting and Bible readings, which could all be done just perfunctorily, is your life all that much different from the life of the man and woman who lives next door? Ask yourself that. Temptation is very real. One other thing in this area, and then I must stop. If we upset one another, which is very easy to do, sometimes we can upset one another totally innocently. We say something, and the tone of voice is not just quite right, and the hearer reads ever so much more into the words than the speaker intended. That's terribly easily done. I mean, I'm quite sure that lots of the things I've said, particularly today, you could have easily misunderstood. That's no reflection on you, it's a reflection on my inability to express myself clearly. So if I've made a mess of it, please come and shoot me down. In our relationships with one another, sometimes our relationships with one another, when they don't go quite right, those relationships can test our faith. Those relationships can become a temptation. Perhaps a relationship between two people, a husband of a wife and a wife of a husband, might, because they express themselves well and they find their minds are in tune, that relationship could easily get too close. That's why, you know, in the commandments, the last commandment, thou shalt not covet thy neighbour's wife. It's got nothing to do with a lady who lives 200 miles away, because you never see her. Simply the fact that the neighbour's wife lives next door, and you see her every day. You see what I mean? There's a nice English word for this. It is called propinquity. One of those, you know, one of those nice English words. It means being close together for the good of neither of you. But that can happen. And it doesn't have to be between a brother and a sister who are respectively married. It could be two brethren who are so much in tune with one another, they could half forget that they were married. Our relationships must always be properly balanced. Now, I know there are some with whom we sort of... Brother Barry would blush if he was here, but he isn't, so he won't. So I'm going to tell you. He and I have never met before. And yet we have found that our minds are on the same wavelength. Some thoughts I've shared with him in the brief conversations we've had, you know, we've only had to sort of start it and we'd nod at one another and there's no need to say any more because there isn't any need to say any more. We know that our minds are going along in the same line. But even that, lovely and rich as it is, must be balanced. We must never become too close. Mind you, he lives in South Africa and I live in the UK, so we have no problem. But you can see what I mean, brethren and sisters, I'm sure, within a closed community like ours, you can sometimes get too close to someone to whom you should not be quite that close. You all know what I mean without me going any further in my words in that relationship. But if our relationship, on the other hand, has been spoiled, if we've said something we shouldn't have said and we've made a mess of it, please, please do what the Lord Jesus says. If you've had a row with Brother X, please go and speak to Brother X. Do not go and speak to Brother Y, and certainly don't tell Sister Z, because then you'll be in dead trouble. You see, I told you I expressed myself badly. I'm getting some black looks from the sisters. But you all know what I mean. We should talk with one another. If you can't make it up, then you call in somebody else. And not somebody who you know in your heart will agree with your viewpoint. Just call in somebody else. That's why, you know, the Lord says a little further down in Matthew 18, where two or three are gathered together in my name, it's those two who can't agree and the third one who's been pulled in. It's got nothing to do with small ecclesias. Nothing at all. It's the two who can't agree and the other one who's been brought in. Where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them. So patch up our relationships and patch them up quickly. Ephesians chapter 4, I think it is. Let not the sun go down upon thy wrath. And if you can't do it straight away in person, you know, having many things to write unto you, I would not write with paper and ink, but I trust to come unto you and see you face to face, that our joy may be full. Face to face. The 23rd best is the telephone, but that's better than nothing. Make up a relationship which has gone wrong quickly. Now, I've made a mistake this morning, brethren and sisters. It's 1 minute past time and I shall be getting some black looks. I won't have time to summarise except to say that we've looked at tribulation. We tried to look at tribulation, at trial and temptation. There really should have been a class on each. We've seen how they overlap a little bit. But the thing that always comes out of these things to me is if only we would commit our way to God much, much more than we do. We won't be saved from tragedy. We won't be saved from unhappiness. We won't be saved from misery. We may not be saved from poverty. But all the circumstances of life are in God's hands, that he may do us good in our latter end. And if the Lord looks on us and says, come ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world, then whatever's happened to us in life, such a reward will be beyond price. Thank you for listening.